This is Faith Footnotes with Northwestern Publishing House, episode 24, Relationships in a Smartphone World. Welcome to Faith Footnotes, Christian conversations with Northwestern Publishing House. You can find us online at nph.net. My name is Joshua Vick.
And I am Tanya Gerbing.
And we are your hosts for Faith Footnotes.
Like our name suggests, this is a Christian podcast that is all about practical resources for connecting with Christ and Christian living. Typically, we will feature engaging conversations with Christian authors, explore helpful answers to common questions about the Christian life, dig deep into faith-related topics, and more.
Have you ever caught yourself reaching for your phone without even thinking about it?
Or maybe you've been talking to someone and realized they're looking at a screen instead of looking at you.
Smartphones have made life easier in a lot of ways, right? We can stay connected with family, find information in seconds, and even use our devices to grow in God's Word.
But like any good gift, they can also compete for our attention. And sometimes the people closest to us are the ones who notice first.
Today we're talking about what it looks like to use technology wisely. Not by throwing our phones away, but by making sure that they don't get in the way of the relationships God gave us.
Joining us is teacher, mother of four, and author, Amy Van Evenhoven. Her book, Look Up From Your Phone So I Can Love You, is an interactive journal that helps parents and children have honest, Christ-centered conversations about smartphones, social media, and building stronger relationships at home.
Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy, you're a teacher and a parent. What first convinced you this topic was a conversation families needed to have?
Well, actually, I knew it was a topic for my family and others out there as a teacher, but I was approached to write this book, and it really came at a timely point in my life when my oldest daughter was about to get her first phone. And so it gave me that hands-on first experiment with, oh, this is real, and it has implications for me and everyone else.
So when you wrote this book, smartphones, of course, were already a major part of life. But in the last couple years, we've seen TikTok explode, AI has become mainstream, and I think children are getting devices at an even younger age. What's changed the most for families?
I think parents feel guilty. I think if one child in their friend group has a phone, parents feel that pressure that my child will be left out. They will be out of the loop. And as they're going, they don't really know what they thought they would do with their child. They just give them the phone and hope that maybe they'll figure it out. But they don't want their child to be excluded.
I think that really puts parents in a tough spot. They want to make the best decision they can for their family, but it's easy to focus on the choices our kids are making. Our own example matters too.
What message do parents send children when they're constantly looking at their own phones?
I think this shows children that maybe do as I say or what I haven't said and not as I do. I think parents also have gotten caught up in this world that we weren't really ready for. One of the chapters in my book talks about just those habits that we have. And in the past, we had social gurus who told us what to do. You write a thank you when you're given a book or a toy or something. You do certain things, and that's just how society functions. And the smartphones have not been around long enough for us to really have that yet. And I think parents are still trying to figure it out, too. And I think when we go forward in society, we'll look back at some point and people will say, wow, we really messed that up a little bit. Maybe we should have been more thoughtful with how we use these, but we didn't know. And I think a lot of it is just stopping and being mindful because they didn't come with a rule box at all. There were no instructions when you opened your phone saying, don't use it this much because it might give you cancer from the battery, or don't use it this much because it's ruining your attention span, or don't use it this much because now your child is looking at the phone for approval and not at you. And I think that's something we didn't have time to be mindful of. We didn't realize we needed to.
So what are some simple, practical ways that parents can model healthy technology habits for their children?
I think first being mindful. Now, some phones will give you how much you've used your phone on average. Not everyone uses that. And that's also hard too, because if you use your phone for work, you're an Instacart shopper or that's your main computer, it might show you that you're using it higher than other people might. But I think just putting it away, realizing you don't need to take a text every time it comes through. It's okay to have space. It's okay at mealtime to say no one is looking at their phone. One person, when I was doing research, had even created a box. And in his story, he talks about how he realized the phone was changing him. And he created this beautiful handcrafted box, and it had simple instructions about opening the box, putting the phone in, and being present. And I think we need to be more reflective that we can put the phone away. And yet we don't have to have a time when children think they have to run to their room to use the phone because mom and dad will be judgmental either. We don't want to create people hiding because they want to use the phone. Communicating with each other, this is a good time when maybe we're all on our phones looking at things, but then we're sharing together. We're talking about what we're looking at. We're not becoming islands, but that we recognize, okay, so now everyone's looked up where we want to go on vacation. Now might be a great time to put the phone away and be present. Let's do something together. But just having those real conversations about when we should be on a phone and when it's okay and maybe when we shouldn't be. I think that's missing in our lives.
As a teacher, and I guess as a mother too, what are some of the biggest ways you've seen smartphones and social media shape the lives of today's children and teens?
I think a lot of it comes down to trends are faster than they ever would have been years ago. And that creates that I'm disappointed. I want what I see out there. Everyone else is doing it faster than before. It used to be you had a Christmas catalog, and that was maybe the only exposure you had to what was new out there. Now you're being inundated with what's new constantly, and we're discontent. Also, just things like AI is a great tool. I mean, there's so many practical applications for it, but it's also maybe subliminally taught us we can be lazy or we can be perfectionists. I don't know the answer, but I can find it really fast without the work that I would normally have to do. And some of those things at our fingertips have stopped us from being productive in ways that maybe we could have authentically done before.
But as a mother, and I suppose even as a teacher, what are some considerations, or do you have any perspective on what a family should consider when they're buying that first phone for their child?
I think it depends somewhat on the age and the circumstances. Every family is completely different. Some parents think they feel safer when their child has a phone. However, when I meet incoming students, I tell their parents that phone has to be turned off, powered off the entire time they're at school. It's a paperweight in your backpack. All communication needs to be done between me or the school office. They cannot use it at all. I think that became just a thought that I could always see where my child was, therefore my child was safer. That's not actually true 100% of the time, because you've now opened the door to other people coming into their lives too. If you let them do anything on social media, on different games, you might have just invited a predator to see into their lives too. And even posting things when they have geolocation and things like that. So sometimes parents think it's safer. That's not necessarily true, but I do understand wanting your child to have a way to communicate with you. A lot of people end up somewhere in those middle grades. When other people end up getting phones, they want their child to be in that loop. Right or wrong, that is a reason people give their children phones. There is a more progressive, and by progressive, I mean a group of parents who have come forward and said, we think that there are problems, and not just parents, but scientists. And they've started a site called Wait Until 8th, and they're doing a huge study of the effects on the brain that come with all this technology. And they actually have people sign waivers and things. And they give other information about why they would prefer your child wait until eighth grade to get a phone. And I understand as a parent that makes you evaluate, do I let my child be in a group on my phone? Do I just say no? Do I talk to other parents and try to have consensus? But every parent is somewhat at a different place with where and why they think their child should have a phone at a certain age. And all those things from health to transportation, those things do affect your decisions.
Many parents know that they should set boundaries around technology, but that's often easier said than done. What have you found that works and what doesn't?
I think what does not work is giving a child a phone and hoping they'll figure it out. We know that their prefrontal cortex does not close up until 24, 25, 26 years old. And their inhibitions go a little haywire in those late teen to early 20s years. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have a phone, but just understanding that they are not going to reason like an adult. So giving a child a phone and then being disappointed when they make choices isn't really fair either. I think there has to be give and take. And I think a lot of parents think, well, I didn't do anything I can't now. And that's not true. With all things, I think we can come back. You know, I look at when my children were little, we were told they had to have skim milk. Every doctor said that. Well, now we laugh kind of at that and say you needed that fat to process. I'm sorry, we did what the doctor said. It's okay to go back to your child and say, you know, I gave you that phone and I didn't really have any rules, but I think that we need to try this. And I think there can be give and take. I think you can say to your child, well, we're going to try 1 hour a day, or you're going to be on your device, whatever that is, a gaming system, 1 hour, and there's some negotiation. Maybe if you save up a couple days, you can have a couple hours on the weekend, or maybe there are special times. But I don't think you can ever say you can't come back. I think it's okay to come back to a topic and say, that's not working, and that's on me. I think we should change what we're doing, and or I don't like that app or what it's doing to your attitude. I think we should talk about that. We're never going to be perfect parents, but we can have open and honest conversations, and we can go back in time and say, I didn't like that, but I think we can change it together going forward.
One thing I appreciate about your book is that it isn't anti-technology. How can families enjoy the benefits of smartphones without letting them interfere with real relationships?
I think it's such a great way to stay connected when we're not in person. That is the value of it. We can do things together. We can research together. I think the problem comes then when we take the joy, maybe the mental hit that being online gives us, and we replace real people with that joy that the phone is giving me. We want the phone to be the tool that connects us to our people, not starts putting a wedge between what real time is. It is sometimes boring to just sit in real time with a person, but realizing that that doesn't mean I take out something to entertain me just because it's boring. It seems that we have a harder time with doing less or doing nothing in our world. One study that I read, it was from 2010, and it talked about college students who, when they were given the choice of sitting alone and doing nothing in a room or giving themselves electrical shocks, about a third of them would prefer to shock themselves than sit and do nothing. And I think on the converse, we've also seen attention spans with the multimedia tasking, they call it, where you flip to this, to this, to this, to this, and back to this, that has started eroding our attention span. So it's just being mindful that it's okay to just be together, to be a little bored, to let the sun be on your face, maybe not take a picture of that meal or everything, be in the moment, not carpe diem, I'm taking a picture of me in the moment. It's okay to have pictures. I love pictures. But to stop and be in the moment too, to be authentic.
Your book is an interactive journal for parents and children to work through together. Why was it important to make it something families do together instead of just simply giving parents advice?
I think it's important to listen to each other. I think that we have ideas about what the other side thinks, and that's not always true. When you stop and ask a parent why you did something, or they ask a child why you did something, or what you're thinking, or what your childhood was like, or what your dreams are, you often find it's different than what you've imposed on them as your thoughts. And just having a chance to view someone else's thoughts does help us understand them better. And that's the goal. We're together for this life and then life eternal. That's our goal. And we want to use these devices in a way that helps us grow together, hopefully grow closer in our relationships and to the Lord. And listening to each other is a key part of that growing together.
As Christians, we know technology itself isn't sinful, but how can families evaluate whether they're using technology as a blessing rather than letting it become a distraction or even an idol?
And that is a tricky question. Like anything, and as a teacher, I go through this with my students, but we have the potential to sin with just about anything. I've done women's retreats where I put on the screen and I ask them, is this sinful or not? And the pencil comes up and they say, not sinful. And the phone comes up and people are like, oh, maybe the phone is sinful. No, the phone isn't sinful. The human is sinful. I've seen plenty of students sin with that pencil, break it, destroy it, poke someone with it. The pencil wasn't sinful. It's the user. Same with a cell phone or any device. It's what the human does to it. And it's really knowing ourselves. If I have a problem overeating at night, I shouldn't put a whole box of cookies in front of myself. Same with something like a phone or things like that. You need to know yourself well enough or start analyzing yourself, your children, to see if your child is always breaking down after 2 hours of being on their phone or 2 hours of being on their gaming system. Obviously, this is not a blessing for them at this point. And figuring out, do we need to dial back the time or how much or what you're using? Studies from different mass media productions have shown us that the more children spend on these kind of things, the less satisfied they are with themselves, the lower grades they're getting. So more does not equal more in a good way. And trying to find children and ourselves find that sweet spot of it's a great tool to stay connected, to do the things smarter in our world that we can, but not hurt ourselves, our relationships, our real time, things that are productive in life.
Do you think setting an intentional boundary or certain rules for a family can help? I'm just remembering like some of my family get-togethers in recent years where everyone's happy to see each other, everyone's conversing, and there's always a moment where you look around the room and everyone has a phone out. And it's just kind of thinking, well, we're only here for a little bit of time together, but we're choosing to spend 5 or 10 minutes of that time looking at our phones.
I do agree with that. And I think that's where it's that evaluative part of us, where if I'm sitting next to you and I want to show you a picture of a grandchild or this new thing my son built and we're sharing, that's interactive. But if I'm taking out my phone to be on Facebook because I'm bored with what you're saying, that's again coming back to the, do I realize and value real people in front of me? And some of that is trying to find that balance of knowing myself. You might have to say to a child, no cell phones out when we're with grandma. You need to give her your attention, or when we're at the family gathering. But again, if I start taking it out and doing things, you know, teaching children that, okay, I'm going to say to someone, I'm sorry, I just got a big message that I need to answer. I've had that before. I've been in a situation where I was a large teacher gathering and I looked around and several of the people I knew were on their phone scrolling. And I really felt bad for the presenter. And I think in moments like that, you put it away. That's just what I think. You put it away and you give them their attention. Same thing when you're with a group of people, unless it's productive for the other person to see, unless I'm sharing with another real person. Or I had a situation where I needed to take a doctor call. I said to everyone at the table, I'll be right back. I have to take this call. That's different than me saying I'm bored with what's going on, so I'm choosing to entertain myself. A lot of our decisions, it turns out, are very selfish when we use our phone.
I can agree with that. sometimes it's, you pull it out just out of habit, mm-hmm. and you start looking. It's like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. You know, I have my parents right here who I haven't seen in months or whoever, and you kind of catch yourself. It's really interesting how our brains get wired into those habits and routines.
And that is real. And a lot of the different social media companies have clued into that they have embedded things so that they scroll. They call it zombie scrolling. We are starting to train ourselves, like you said, almost you feel that touch of your phone. It didn't actually go off, but you think it did, and you pull it out and you check it. And I think, again, it's being mindful of, wait, I can put it away or lock it in the car. Don't even bring it if you're not anticipating an emergency. It's okay to be separated from those things. And like I said, I think it comes back to parents too, because there is no Emily Post book out that we can take out and learn, okay, that wasn't the way I should have done it. I should have done it this way. We're kind of writing the book.
For the parent listening who feels like they've already made mistakes or whose child just isn't interested in talking about the phone at all, what encouragement would you offer?
I would own it. I would say to the child, I didn't realize that it would look like this. And I think I and we can do better here. And you're not being punished. But I think it's so important, these skills of being able to use a phone correctly, but also be able to put it away and be present, are so important in real life. That when you're waiting in the grocery store line, I don't want you to think you have to pull out your phone. You could smile at someone. You can do other things. And if I haven't shared that with you, if I've taught you that every time we're at a stoplight, you should grab the phone, I'm sorry. We'll work at it together. And if when you're an adult, you choose to use it differently, that's fine. But for now, I think this is how we would like to use it.
Just as you were giving that encouragement, it made me think of our biggest outreach is just connecting to people face to face. And if you're always on a phone or looking at your phone without really paying any attention to what's around you or who's around you, you're kind of missing opportunities, I think. And it's kind of an interesting takeaway.
Mm-hmm. I think there's so many opportunities for using technology. Ironically, I'm the teacher who teaches children how to make a Google slide and how to make those presentations and how to get into their computer and how to type. I have nothing against the technology. Very often, we do so much outreach through technology in the mass. But on a personal level, we can do so much more by being present, making eye contact, smiling at someone, just being there. Mm-hmm. And that can make more of an effect on people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, God has given us so many opportunities to be together as family and friends. We don't need the phones in there ruining it.
No. No, we don't. Take the picture and then set it down.
But wait, I got to send it to everybody.
Right. Do
then
one.
I got to post it.
Right. Do one without leaving the other undone. Right.
If every family listening made just one small change after hearing this conversation, what would you hope that change would be?
I would just say be mindful of your habits so that you can be more present. I look at, now you can't say as much the mall, but being in Florida for many years in the hot, you would go to the mall and do your shopping and you'd see people who weren't looking at anyone, but just being mindful when you look at those people out there, those are people God loves, just like he loves you. And if I could just see the people around me and see the people in my life and the people I don't even know more by being a little more mindful, giving them a smile, being welcoming, doing those things that are becoming outdated maybe in our society, be mindful so you can be more present with your people.
Well, thank you, Amy, for joining us today. This has been a great conversation.
You can find the show notes and links to the resources discussed on today's show at blog.nph.net. Let us know what your biggest takeaway was from today's show in the comments section. And if this conversation got you thinking about your own relationship with your phone and the people right in front of you, Amy's book is a great next step. Look Up From Your Phone So I Can Love You is just $10 through August 15th. Use code LOOKUP26 when you order at nph.net. And be sure to follow our show on your preferred podcast platform. We hope you join us again next month for another great conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Faith Footnotes from Northwestern Publishing House. Keep the conversation going by visiting nph.net.